Morning TNC family, on this fourth Sunday in August, where today here we move into part three of a four-part series rooted in the New Testament book of James, which was a letter written by James, the brother of Jesus and leading figure in the Jerusalem church after Jesus' death and resurrection, a letter written with the intention that it would be read, copied, and distributed to all of the churches that were springing up throughout the then-known world. But facing questions and confusion and opposition surrounding how do I live in the way of Jesus when it's not always easy? And so James writes this letter filled with advice for Christians taking steps in the faith and experimenting with new ways to live out Christ-like forgiveness, inclusion, thanksgiving, perseverance, generosity, and so on. And his counsel is brilliant, so much so that it has stood the test of time for 2,000 years now. Across generations and cultures, meaning we too will benefit from letting God's Spirit speak to us through this letter. And today I want to talk with you about just two sentences of his letter, recorded in verses 16 and 17 of chapter 3. And I want to set them up this way. Imagine that you're in your kitchen or walking in your neighborhood or at your place of work or the grocery store or the dog park, or you just sat down for dinner at your favorite restaurant. And suppose, while you were there, someone walks up to you. Now the question, would you like the person to be the walking embodiment of verse 16 or verse 17? Who would you rather see coming towards you? Verse 16, where there is jealousy and self-ambition, there you will get disorder, agitated behavior, and all kinds of evil. Verse 17, where there is wisdom from above, there you will get peace, gentleness, mercy, impartiality, and sincerity. And of course, the question answers itself. I mean, no one is going to pick, hey, here comes someone who is jealous, agitated, and self-seeking, over, hey, look, here comes sincerity, gentleness, and impartiality. And of course, the challenge is not how to spot the first kind of person, but rather how to become the second kind of person, which is what James is trying to help the churches with, because in verse 14, he mentions again these two, jealousy and the accompanying contention. And then in chapter 4 and verse 1, he asks, where does this jealousy and unrest come from? Answer, quote, it comes from within, from the passions that war within you, within. It's an inside job, James says. And then he goes on to write, and so we must seek, allow, submit, ask, pray, learn, get humble, do the inside work of overcoming jealousy and the passions that war within us because of it. It is not a passive thing, James says. It's a proactive thing. Which means, TNC, that I want to think with you for a few minutes about some wisdom surrounding how we can actually move towards overcoming jealousy. Because wherever you find it, you'll find unrest and agitation. And you'll see in its wake the destruction to individuals and families and communities and relationships of all kinds. So, here's number one, first bit of wisdom for overcoming jealousy. Number one, be careful with comparison. Be careful with comparison. And this is not the kind of comparison where you're inspired by somebody else or you seek out a mentor so you can learn from them how to become more like them. There's nothing wrong with appropriate self-evaluation in relationship to another person. This is, in fact, the work of an apprentice or a disciple. What James means here when he warns us to be careful with comparison is chapter 4 and verses 2 and 3. Quote, you want something and you haven't got it, so you scheme and kill. You are jealous of what others have, but you can't get it, so you argue and fight. This is the kind of comparison that creates a war within you, James says. And the problem with this kind of comparison is you'll never win because somebody is always going to be able to beat you in one category. It doesn't matter who you are. You can be smart, but you'll find somebody smarter. You can be good looking, but one day you'll run into somebody who you'll consider prettier or more handsome. You can be talented, funny, a great conversationalist, but someone is always going to be more talented, funnier, and a better conversationalist. And jealousy emerges when we see that something that's in somebody else And then we compare my money with their money, my job with their job, my looks with their looks, my family with their family. And I evaluate in the moment of that comparison that what I have in this area is inferior, less than, not enough, which leads me to feel threatened or embarrassed or ashamed. Notice what I'll do in all of these situations is compare myself in only one category. Now think about the moment in which you might feel jealous. This is a profound truth of jealousy. The moment I feel jealous is the moment that one thing about that other person makes me feel inferior. I'm jealous of that person's fame, that person's money, that person's looks, that person's charm, that person's conversation in this moment. And so what we do is we screenshot one arbitrary quality, one arbitrary moment, and then we hyper-focus on it. A screenshot, you know, is when you are on a web page and you might be reading the whole page, but then you see a picture or read a sentence you like and you left click, drag, copy, paste that one thing and then you focus on it. And this is the problem with screenshots. You aren't seeing the whole picture. And now you're jealous of something that isn't even real. Now you feel bad about yourself based upon what is not even real. Because if you don't see the whole picture, then you don't know what the cost is that is associated with the screenshot. Famously, and I've shared this with you a few times over the years, a fan once said to Jerry Rice, the greatest wide receiver to ever play football, "I'd love to play football like you, Jerry." Rice replied, "No, you wouldn't." "Oh yeah, I'd give anything to do what you do." Again, Rice said, "No, you wouldn't." The fan persisted. Finally, Rice said, "So many people say that to me. But no one's willing to do what I did in order to do what I do. I used to get up at 5 a.m. every day and run until my feet had blisters and then lift weights until my hands bled. I would work harder than anybody else. No one is willing to do what I did, but everyone wants to do what I do." Screenshot. And the Grammy goes to... whole picture. A work ethic of writing and rewriting music and accepting feedback and jotting down ideas continually and tweaking lyrics and late work hours and taking time to travel away from family and giving up my privacy and. Screenshot. "Oh, I'd like to be like that successful business person." Whole picture. Risk, risk. Failure, failure, failure. Rejection, rejection. Discouragement, complaint. Coming home late. Waking up early. Screenshot. "Oh, I'd like to be like her." Whole picture. She got there by reading 2 books a week for 5 years and signing up for that internship and staying in the lab over the weekend while you went to Destin. See, be careful what you screenshot from another person's life because you don't know what it costs them. And sometimes the cost is the complete loss of a relationship for that person in order to become what you see. See, what you don't see is what happened to their relationship with their child or spouse or sibling or parent. And so TNC, we can't get in the business of setting the blueprint of our lives based on the snapshot of somebody else's life. Don't try to model your life on someone else's moment. And this is the first bit of wisdom from James surrounding jealousy. Jealousy thrives in an environment of comparison, so be careful with comparisons. Okay, number 2, second bit of wisdom for overcoming jealousy. Let go of your limiting belief. Let go of your limiting belief. An idea I first came across in the work of Ezra Sullivan, professor of psychology at St. Thomas Aquinas University in Rome, who writes about the idea of this limiting belief in his most recent book on ethics, theology, and biopsychology. Let me explain that phrase, a limiting belief. A limiting belief sounds like this. "I'm a worrier. That's just who I am. I'll always worry. I'm a jealous person. That's just who I am. I'm just the jealous type. I'm a broken person. You'll just have to accept that about me. I was born impatient," one person might say. "I'm just attracted to that sort of person. That's just the way I am," another person says. And sometimes we justify it to ourselves. "It must be my genetic makeup. It must be something out of my control. It's just the way I am." And this is what Sullivan calls a limiting belief. It's what you believe about yourself that you also believe is unchangeable. And Sullivan goes on to say that limiting beliefs, they arise from ingrained habits. that over time shape our emotions, behaviors, and experiences, becoming so familiar that we mistake them for fixed aspects of our identity, leading to the false belief that change is impossible because these traits, well, they're just natural. They're just essential to how I am made. And the problem is, he says, is we equate what is secondary with what is primary in ourselves. Hang with me. Here are some primary things. Things basic to our human nature. Things that are not changeable. We were created with the ability to think and feel and desire and breathe and eat and relate and act and want meaning. That's part of being a human being that will never change. But secondary things are expressions of those things. Things like our level of love, joy, peace, patience, generosity, faithfulness, self-control, anger, greed, selfishness, jealousy. And the problem is when our primary nature gets confused with our secondary nature. When what doesn't change gets confused with what can change. Now, of course, sometimes we like to confuse them because if I come to believe that it's possible for me to change, oh my word, now I have to take responsibility to change and do the hard work of self-knowledge, looking at things in me I'd rather not look at. Then I'll have to accept that change might happen, which will require work. So the key question, Sullivan says, is will I give up, will I surrender my limiting belief and believe that change can happen with God's grace? Now, James talks a fair bit about this in chapter 4. Will I submit the things of my secondary nature to the things from above, from the way I was created? Which leads to a question, TNC. What might be your limiting belief? And a good first place to look at this, because this could take some work, here's a good first place. In what area of your life are you most worried? Or here's another question. What do you like least about yourself? Or what do you feel most trapped by? These are diagnostic questions for discovering your limiting belief. But here's the wisdom. Once you identify it, will you confess it, seek help for it, pray over it, and then let it go? Let go of your limiting belief. Okay, number 3, third bit of wisdom for overcoming jealousy, and it's the 3-word phrase, go get 'em. Go get 'em, a commonly used universal cheer focused on helping someone feel motivated to take action today. Go get 'em. Or in the words of the psalmist, this is the day the Lord has made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Or to quote James chapter 4, verse 13 from his letter. Now look here, you people who say today or tomorrow. You have no idea what the next day will bring. What is your life? You are a mist which appears for a little while and then disappears again. Instead say, if the Lord will it, we shall live it and shall do it. This is about falling in love with the here and the now. If the Lord will it, we shall live it and shall do it. Fall in love with a hobby today, an event you've planned today, an idea, an opportunity today. I still love and remember from time to time what Jerry Seinfeld said years ago in an interview with Oprah Winfrey. Seinfeld was talking about one of the most important life lessons he has learned. And he said, quote, you must learn to love the moment you're in. Learn to fall in love. Fall in love with your street, your tennis game, a pillow. Someone could say, I love this fork, and I think that was great. Pay attention. Don't let life get by you. Fall in love with the back of your cereal box. Because, and now we're back to James, the more you like something in the here and now, the less you need to look to other people or things in order to find your joy and your peace. And actually, here and now, that's the title of a great Henry Nouwen book. Nouwen was the wonderful spiritual writer, Harvard and Yale professor, theologian, Catholic priest, who left his professorship to work with people with intellectual and developmental disabilities in Ontario, Canada. And in his book, he says, quote, it is hard to live in the present. The past and the future keep harassing us. The past with guilt, the future with worries. So many things have happened in our lives about which we feel uneasy, regretful, angry, confused, or at least ambivalent. Guilt says, you ought to have done something other than what you did. Worries fill our lives with what ifs. What if I lose my job? What if my father dies? What if there is not enough money? What if the economy goes down? What if war breaks out? He He goes on, "These oughts and ifs can so fill our mind that we become blind to the flowers in the garden and the smiling children on the streets, or deaf to the voice of a friend. These are the real enemies of our life, the oughts and the ifs. They pull us backward into the unalterable past and forward into the unpredictable future. But real life takes place in the here and now. Real life takes place in the go get 'em." And I think of Jesus saying that to me sometimes. Go get 'em, David. Go get 'em. Exercise again. Practice again. Forgive again. Show up again. Read the Bible again. Pray again. Serve again. Listen again. Follow through again. Say no again to that negativity, that outburst of anger, that jealousy. Because today is a day full of possibilities. And today, if the Lord will it, I shall live it and shall do it. And what can help us with all of this? How can we move towards being careful with our comparisons and letting go of our limiting beliefs and going and getting them? Well, the best way is to surround yourself with a loving community of human beings, the church. This is what James's great hope and vision in the letter is. It's that the church that he's writing to, it's that people can help other people see that they're valuable just the way they are. No need for jealousy. I think of that simple phrase in Acts chapter 16 where Paul is traveling with Silas and Timothy, and they go around from one community to another, and the text says that when they arrive, verse 5, quote, "the churches were strengthened in faith and grew daily in number." Hey, look who's coming. It's Paul, Silas, Timothy. Time to get strengthened. Question, who would you rather see coming towards you? Verse 16, where there is jealousy and self-ambition, there you will get disordered, agitated behavior and all kinds of evil. Verse 17, where there is wisdom from above, there you will get peace, gentleness, mercy, impartiality, and sincerity. Who would you rather see coming towards you? Let's pray. God, help us to become people who live from the wisdom that comes from above. Help us to be a community that strengthens one another so we'll have no need for comparisons and have courage to let go of our limiting belief and the joy that comes with a go-get-em spirit of, if the Lord will it, we shall live it and shall do it. Now, TNC, I pray that the Lord would bless you and keep you, would make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you, would turn his face toward you and give you peace. Amen.